all my life, been grinding all my life. Sacrifice, hustle paid the price. Wanna slice, got to roll the dice. That's why all my life, I've been grinding all my life. Look, all my life.
Welcome to Darren and Sterling right here on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, 1510.com, Twitter and Facebook Live. I am Sterling Holmes live in studio. Darren Smith live at his home studio. Darren, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, but not as good as our good friend is, who's going to be joining us momentarily, Mr. Michael Coleman, sports director from KOTV ABC 7. But I will say this, of all the people who was feeling pretty good today, one has to be the NBA's LaMarcus Aldridge, who retired from the Brooklyn Nets today, man. What you think about that?
I don't know if he's feeling pretty good. Dude had to retire because of health concerns.
Hey, but better to retire ahead than too late.
Sure, no. He's very lucky he caught this when he did. And you know what? He may end up getting a ring out of it, even for only playing, what, three games with the Nets? If they win, he still gets a ring.
That's true.
He could be going out on top.
Hey, that's the way to go. Hey, and he still got his health. We're joined this afternoon by the great Michael Coleman, sports director from KOTV ABC 7. Michael, good afternoon to you.
How you guys doing on a Thursday afternoon?
Doing pretty good, man. We, I wanted to get you on. I wanted to just get some NFL talk out the way. But before we do that, you made a big announcement earlier today that the people of Kansas City, you know, if people who aren't on social media, kind of like a few of us are, please repeat your major announcement, because you got a certificate today.
Oh, yeah.
As
folks know, or do not know, back in October of 20, I had prostate cancer, and I had the prostate removed, and I thought it was going to be zip. Bit, boom, move on, but it's not that simple, because it turned out that I still had numbers, and the whole objective of removing the prostate is to get rid of the numbers. I still had numbers, and so the next phase was to go through radiation. After it was discovered that I had a lesion on the lower part of my spine, which had, you know, the piece of the prostate had escaped and carry that cancer cell, and as I get an education on this, so that's how it spreads. So although I'm told it's a low grade of cancer, cancer's cancer. I mean, if you steal a 10-cent, well, it don't cost you a cent anymore. If you send if you steal a dollar Snickers bar, you know, it you stole it. You know, it's in the same category. So the next plan of action was 39 treatments of radiation. Started doing a week after the Super Bowl, because I got that diagnosed days before the Super Bowl. So a week after, they said, when you come back from Florida, we want to start doing the radiation treatments. So it was Monday through Friday, like a 15, 20-minute process. The only side effect that I felt of the three they said I would was the heat flashes, where I was perspire. And whether it be at my desk or even in the middle of the night at home. And I have a fan parked right next to me that when I start feeling it, you know, I dry myself off with a towel and let it cool me off. So, but I'm still able to work out and all that stuff. I haven't lost my appetite. In fact, I've intentionally gained weight just to make sure that I can still eat, which I can. So now it's time to get back to the gym. So now that this phase is over, I have to I'll take chemotherapy, but it won't be the intravenous type. It'll be oral pills. I'll take a pill in the morning, a pill at night, and when I said, how long will I be doing this? They said, well, probably indefinite. But it sounds like, and I was told this early in the game, I'm going to be battling this for the rest of my life. So I'm going to have to always have a health plan. And my wife's going to have to always be working. Both of us are. So that's where I'm at. I'm optimistic. I feel fine. You know, I just want everybody that's listening to this, please get those numbers checked. And as far as how I feel, the way I feel right now is the way I felt 2 years ago, 3 years ago, a year ago. Other than the heat flashes, which will, now that I'm through with the radiation, as I was told, in 2 weeks, my body will get back to normal because no more radiation is necessary. But get those numbers checked, and I'm optimistic, and I have no choice but to be. I'm always a guy that says, press on.
Well, Mike, you look, I had to have you on because, one, I needed to hear that for myself, along with other listeners listening to the show right now. So you already know that you're in our thoughts and prayers. And the fact that, you know, I didn't know about this until now. Now, I knew you were going to the doctor. We would always have a conversation, but I didn't know what it was for going every day. So the fact that, you know, you've been able to make it through, man, and, of course, obviously with Gina by your side, man, we wish you nothing but the best. And doggone it, I still owe you some ribs now that I think about it. So, you know,
I'm not going to.
Oh, yeah. Well, thinking about that, I'm like, well, I don't know how it's going to help with your, you know, with you getting back in the gym or whatever, because, you know, once we go to Gates, it's all over with.
We're rooting for you, but Darren's excuse over here is going, no, you can't have ribs anymore. Sorry, doctor's orders, no more ribs.
I appreciate that. And like I said, when I did the prostate surgery and I did what I did, and then, because I'm not gonna lie, I was heartbroken when I went for my follow up and there were still numbers when there were not supposed to be. I was sad. I was like, whoa, because I found that out sitting at my desk when they said, well, we found a lesion on your CAT scan. They found a lesion on your spine. I said, well, what's that mean? And when the doctor, my urologist, explained that to me, I almost began to hyperventilate a little bit. I had to get myself under control because my whole perspective was, you guys told me if I go in and get this done, we're good. But I guess that's what it means to say or to be told you got to it early. Because down in my region down there where the operation was, it is gone. It just found its way to get someplace else. And from what I understand, because of where it's located, that lesion, it made it much easier for the radiation to do its thing. So, I mean, you always have to keep, as I'm learning, you have to always look at a bright side of something, you know. And so in this case, that's what they told me. I'll go back for a reading of the PSA not till March or May 24th is when I'll go back to have them read that. And I'll start this pill thing probably next week sometime. But I'm not limited to doing anything. Everything is cool. It's just, you know, it's just kind of mind-boggling. Once you get the news, then you get used to it. And I know I'm surrounded by tremendous people, a beautiful wife, and great friends. And so I know that part of it, on a psychological tip, is going to be great.
Well, Mike, well, look, we don't want to make, you know, we don't want to make this conversation sound worse. So we're going to switch over to football. And I do want to ask you, the Dallas Cowboys today, there's been five teams that have issued statements regarding intention to boycott on-field in-facility off-season work. The Cowboys today, they had a players-only Zoom video conference today, and they've talked about, they've discussed the recommendation with the unions that players not attend. At the moment, it seems as though the Dallas Cowboys, you know, they're not 100% all the way in as it relates to boycotting voluntary workouts. What information, your thoughts on that, on these players? Because there's five teams, I think, thus far that have decided that they're going to boycott the voluntary workouts. But where do the players stand down there in Dallas?
Well, I think this from jump. There's only one feared owner in the National Football League.
True.
And his name is Jerry Jones. I mean, Jerry treats his guys well. And I think Jerry wants loyalty, even at the expense of not being in line with other players who are seeking the same, you know, desires of fairness or what they deem to be fair. So I don't think they're going to do that. I think they're going to toe the line, you know, just like they did with the flag and the anthem and all of that. And those that didn't, they're no longer on that team. But they were not mainstays anyway, you know. And so I'd be really surprised if they boycotted of any type. I really will be. Because Jerry, he wields a really tough hammer. Because he plays on your emotions as a player. You know, I mean, he's getting criticized now for the contract that Zeke had, you know,
as he should.
And I think that criticism is warranted. But deep in his heart, Jerry believes he did the right thing, although initially he did not want to. But the mere fact that he wound up doing it, you know, he can't afford to sidetrack. Same thing with Dak. Dak got his money. You know, Jerry can't backtrack on that. And so when he's making moves like that, he's expecting a big return in terms of you're loyal to me, you're loyal to the Cowboys organization and not the union.
Now, Mike, it was interesting, and you know, because I know Australian feels about running backs, but at that time, with Z coding out, he was considered probably the number one running back in the NFL. And so whether you overpay or not, basically in free agency, you're going to overpay. Now, he was already under his rookie contract, but, you know, but I guess he wanted to provide financial security, you know, because of how the running back position is. I can't really get on the whole, well, you know, Jerry Jones should regret the contract he signed, because at the time, you know, I know Sterling doesn't like running backs, but at the time, for the number one running back, it was warranted, even though if you look at what happened to Todd Gurley, what are the two different scenarios because of how the teams, how the offenses ran. So, I mean, I don't really get the whole, you know, we're looking at Jerry Jones sideways because of Zeke's contract now. Now, Zeke may not have lived up to his contract. Now, that's fair if you say that. But to say that Jerry Jerry shouldn't have did that contract back then. Well, if he doesn't, he walks and goes somewhere. Somebody else is going to pay.
I think that's the refrain, is how Zeke has not performed. You know, Jerry paid for what, you know, let's face it, athletes for the most part get paid for what they did, not for what they're going to do. And so
that's what I've been trying to tell Sterling.
You know, and so I think that's the deal. Now, I just think their best back right now, and the young kid is Gallup.
Tony Pollard.
That's what I get he and the receiver confused. Tony Pollard. Yeah. He's a great back. Now, is he going to get more reps? I don't know.
Nope.
I've said within four games of the season, if Zeke is not producing the Zeke way, you got to get Pollard in there to get more reps.
This is the whole point I've been making the entire time, is owners, GMs, you got to be smarter than the average fan. You don't pay running backs. You just don't do it. Look around the NFL. If Jerry Jones wants to be known as some master negotiator, he's going to get a lot of bleep from people for doing this deal. Same reason why Todd Gurley didn't work out. Same thing, Christian McCaffrey.
Though.
It's not going to work out. Doesn't matter who you are. You have to be smarter than the average fans. You have more numbers than we do. The fact that they paid Zeke that money, and then now you have to overpay Dak Prescott because you overpaid Zeke? Yeah, you're not a master negotiator. You paid Amari Cooper just beyond what anyone else in the NFL is going to pay.
You're not
a master negotiator. That's my whole point, is Jerry Jones always gets this, oh, he's a great negotiator. He knows what he's doing. I think he has zero idea what he's doing. I think, like you said, he pays players basically to say, don't join the union. That's basically what he does. Because I don't think he has any idea what he's doing when it comes to on-the-field performance.
And he won't listen to his son. His son is the lesser of the, I'm not going to say evil, but his son's got his head on straight. His son understands it. His son gets it. I mean, I've been told on more than one occasion, when Johnny Manziel was available for the draft, Steve was like, no, Dad, we're not going to make this move. And Jerry listened to him.
Now, I will say, I did reach out to the Chiefs today to find out where the players stand. I was told that they don't have an answer right now, I guess, you know, because a lot of teams are coming out with press releases or whatever. So the players, they haven't coordinated or had a players meeting to decide whether or not they're going to boycott voluntary workouts. I have been told that I'll be on a media call on Monday when Coach Reed and I think maybe Brett Veach are going to be mentioned, you know, talking to us or whatever, because I do want to know, you know, because Sterling, you know, we've talked about it, where these teams are putting out these press releases. I think the Chicago Bears, obviously Tampa Bay, and some of these others are doing it. So, of course, we want to know where do the Chiefs stand.
The funny part is, how can you boycott voluntary workouts? That's an oxymoron.
Yeah, right?
The only thing about it is if you have it in your contract, like if you get some type of bonus or something for showing up, or incentive or contract, you know, for showing up to these workouts. And I think that's the biggest thing right now, because the players union want to make sure that the players, you know, that – look, don't violate your contract. Now, if it's voluntary, it's voluntary. But if you have it in your incentive that you show up for, you know, a voluntary OTA or something like that, then go, because you don't want to, you know, because you don't want to be in breach. And the union, above anything, wants the players to get their money.
So, Michael, I want to hear your thoughts on this. I said this in the show yesterday, and I want to see if you agree with me. After the players saw how the performance was last year, there was no drop-off with the no voluntary workouts, without having OTAs in your typical training camps. The play from season to season was very consistent. Not the big drop-off a lot of people thought. Players are now saying, well, why the heck am I flying? Say you live in L.A., say you live in Miami, say you don't live in Kansas City. Why am I flying in to do something that could be taking place over a Zoom or something I could be doing by myself and working out? If they don't trust me to work out by myself, do I want to be in this organization? I think players are starting to realize, what's the point of me going away from my family and kind of just hanging out in an area and doing what I would be doing anyways, just away from where I would like to be?
You make a good point. The cat's out the bag. And you can also apply that to employers just in business. I mean, for instance, we're slowly bringing people back into the building. But I think the television game is going to be such, you know what, you took care of business away from the office because you had to be away from the office. Why do you need to come back?
Yeah.
You have an option. You can stay at home to work, or you can come to the office. And I think that's the same thing in the NFL, because you're right. I mean, there was a lot of question marks. Now, some players, like, you know, for instance, Cam Newton, when they talk about his you know, his game going south, it's like, well, no workouts, no this, no that. If that affects anybody, maybe it affects the new team to that, the new player to that team. But I think overall, you know, the productivity, I mean, the Chiefs didn't have much, they didn't have a fall off.
Yeah.
You know, the playoff teams were the playoff teams of 2 years ago. So I think it's a good point. And I think the players are like, well, you know, plus think about owners and old school coaches. You know, not the Shanahans. Those are the new breed.
Yeah.
They're used to what they're used to, you know. And change is tough. You know, change is tough. And I guarantee you, if there was no CDC and you still had the coronavirus, they would have done football last year the way they've done it previously in training camp. They'd have gone to training camp. They'd have had the OTAs. Yep. There'd been no virtual Zoom, you know. So I think there's something to that. The players are like, well, wait a minute. A year ago at this time, I was X, Y, and Z, and I still fulfilled what I was supposed to do. And that's probably the mindset of especially a lot of the young players, man.
My thing is, I'm not for just all of a sudden banning voluntary workouts. I'm all for making voluntary workouts actually voluntary. That's all I'm saying. Like you said, Cam Newton, if you know, voluntary workouts would have helped him, I'm sure he would have done it. And he, like this year, with no COVID kind of going on the back burner as far as how the NFL's handling stuff, if Cam Newton wants to go to that, let him go to it. But he shouldn't be penalized for not showing up to a voluntary workout. That's the only thing I'm trying to say.
I mean, the only other side to that would be, the coin would be the Antonio Browns, the knuckleheads, because you want to keep an eye on them to make sure they're not doing anything else extracurricular. You know, because sometimes when you look at how they operate, it's like they're being babysitters.
Yeah.
You got grown men who have families who don't need babysitters. If they don't know how to conduct themselves in terms of a professional athlete, you know, other than what they bring to the table for the game, you know, what else are they there for?
We'll see. Well, those guys won't get signed. Look, those guys. Look, Antonio Brown still looking. You know why? Because teams don't want to have to. They don't want to have to babysit him.
But they don't want to pay him that money either. They won't. Yeah, but they also don't want to pay him the amount of money that he's looking for. Mike, you talk about players and responsibility. 3-time NFL Defensive Player of the Year Aaron Donald finds himself in a sticky situation right now, where over the weekend, an attorney in Pittsburgh filed a complaint against Aaron Donald on behalf of his client, who said that he was allegedly assaulted by Aaron Donald on April the 11th. Now, I don't know if you've seen the picture of this guy, obviously, oh, okay, well, you might want to, but I would say that Aaron Donald is probably the wrong person to pick a fight with, but literally, I guess now I know you remember the movie Life, Michael, with Eddie Murphy and Martin Lawrence. Well, They actually have a club in Pittsburgh called the Boom Boom Room.
The Boom Boom Room, the Eddie's always talked about. Ray.
Yeah. And so I guess there was an altercation that took place in there that ended up where both parties ended up having to go outside and was at.
Darren, you're cutting out there, my man.
Being the case, fisticuffs, I guess, might have been thrown. And oh, I'm sorry, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. And so it just seems as though if you're Aaron Donald, why go to a nightclub? You know, and granted, I know you're from Pittsburgh. You went to Pitt, but why find yourself in a sticky situation like that? Because now, you know, whether he did or not, his name was invoked, and in charges are possibly going to be filed against him in that manner. If you're Aaron Donald, why are you in that situation?
Well, and also this, if it was you or me or Sterling that got into this fight or whatever, this guy, would he sue us?
No.
Look how convenient this is.
Yeah.
Look, that's a very convenient. Oh, that's what that is. Well, I'm filing a lawsuit. You know? And that's like the baseball player, Yasiel Puig,
yep,
is in a little sticky situation. I don't know if it happened or didn't happen at Staples Center during the game of the Lakers or whatever, but he says he can't get signed now because of that. And it's like, okay, what are you guys doing to put yourself in that situation? Like, you got to be, see, man, you know, it goes back to what we talked about earlier. Maybe some of these guys, they need to be babysat, you know, just to save them from themselves sometimes, because a lot of these guys are it's open season on athletes with money. That's kind of redundant. Yeah. On athletes.
well, Michael, it's a double-edged sword because, for example, I don't think there should be any issue with Aaron Donald going to a bar. I think that some people do want – they see he's an athlete. They know that if he can get him to throw a punch, he'll sue him.
Yeah.
It's one of these things where it's like you have to take the entire equation in because – of course, if you keep going after a dude, eventually he's going to get agitated enough, you're going to get your ass kicked by him. You're not going to hurt Aaron Donald. He's going to hurt you just because you can't lay a finger on him because you can't. You could punch Aaron Donald. He's not going to get hurt. If it was one and one, Aaron Donald's the one hurting you. He shouldn't be extra penalized, in my opinion, for some guy. I don't know everything yet, but some guy was probably being a bleep hole, agitated him. And then all of a sudden, now he's going to sue him. My thing is, if you're the guy agitating him, you have to live with the consequences.
Oh, yeah. And you can be sure he's got some ambulance-chasing lawyer who's pressing for this. He's trying to get his commission. He's trying to get his piece of the action. It goes, though, you know, and in some cases, remember the Charles Barkley days? Charles was always getting called out. Charles was like, well, let's just go get it. Let's get after this. And nothing, I mean, he even won his own court case, you know? You know, and look at Charles. He's so beloved.
Yeah, but Barkley's a special kind of special.
Yeah, we know he didn't win out based on his golf game.
Oh, man. Mike, before we get you out of here, LaMarcus Aldridge, I know he used to play at San Antonio. He was in Brooklyn. He announced his retirement today, you know, irregular heartbeat, things of the nature. Any thoughts on his retirement and how that affects the Brooklyn Nets?
Well, it came out of left field, too. When I was leaving my home today, and I heard Max or Stephen A. talking about health, but I didn't hear the name. You know, I wasn't paying that much attention to it. And then when I got to my office and I saw my phone, I was like, oh, that must have been what they were talking about. But good for him. I mean, you know, like you guys said, he'll probably get a ring, or he has a good chance of getting a ring. But you catch a situation like that. It's like Earl Campbell told me one time, he has a jacked up spinal cord. And he found out years later, if that had been detected, he would have been advised not to play football. And in a lot of ways, he was lucky because, you know, that was never the issue for him. But for Aldridge, I think it's hey, your health comes first. And that's the way it's supposed to be because he's only 35 years old. I think he had a nice little run.
Yeah.
A nice little run. So enjoy what you've been able to do and look forward to what you're about to do.
Now, you know, we were just talking about players and teams not not doing the in-person workout. It looks as though the Chicago Bears, the majority of their locker room, and the Cleveland Browns are saying that they're not going to attend. So
if I'm the Browns, let's go, guys. Let's go ahead and go to these workouts. Because look what we did last year without a workout. We need to be at the workouts. I think that – see, there are some teams
–
maybe they don't need to be there, but
I'm sorry.
For the unity aspect.
I'm sorry, Mike. The question I want to ask you, because I know I want to jump in for Sterling did. They had signed the Cleveland Browns signed Jadeveon Clowney on yesterday, and you know he made some comments about playing on the other side of Myles Garrett. I'm like, well, do you play with J.J. Watt, and you didn't have any breakout years? Does this move now? I think Sean and I both agree that this move helps the Cleveland Browns, but does it help them maybe to overcome or overtake Kansas City next year in their hopes of trying to get to the Super Bowl, and then overall? You know, where do you think that this team looks offensively and defensively going into 2021?
Well, I don't want to say it that way. What that move has to do is get them past Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. You'll deal with Kansas City when you deal with Kansas City if that's what you have to do.
Yep.
But build
Baltimore.
Now they're the favorites too. From where I've seen everybody picking them to win the AFC North. You know, I'm just old school because I think Pittsburgh's going to pull a rabbit out of their hat, but you've got to always be in position to take care of your division. Take care of your division, and then you can start thinking about what you can do outside of it. But I think that's a good move. I mean, he didn't turn out to be the player we all thought he was going to be. It's amazing as to what one play can make you think about a particular player, you know, when he was still in college. And he never garnered up to do that. And so you know, just like Alden Smith, I'm glad he got picked up by Seattle. I think he has a better upside than Clowney.
Yeah. Well, Alden Smith, first off, M-I-Z. Two, Alden Smith, dude was out of NFL, out of football, and all of a sudden Alden Smith's like, you know what, I think I'm going to come back.
Yeah.
Not really in football shape, and then just has the season he does. It just speaks to the talent, athleticism that he has. He really could have been one of the greatest. When you look at what
he was on his way.
Yeah.
He was on his way.
And that's another example of sometimes you can get agitated. Stay out of that situation because he had such a bright future ahead of him. I'm glad he's finally now getting another chance. It seems like he's finally gotten his career, his life back on track. But he's one of those what could have been stories.
No, you're really right. And you know, and hopefully it works out for him in Seattle. I mean, Seattle seemed like a low-key place. And I mean, he was fine in Dallas. There was no issues or anything like that. And I hope he has a handle on that. I mean, you know, he's the kind of guy that you worry about during the offseason. But hopefully the success he had last season, he keeps that in mind, and he stays strong. And I want things to work out for Alden big time.
Definitely. Micah, I want to thank you. Appreciate your time, man. Again,
all right,
and our thoughts and our prayers. I don't know if I'm going to talk to you tonight or tomorrow morning. I just thought about it. It is Thursday.
Yeah,
man, the week just goes by pretty fast. That's Michael Coleman, the sports director for KLTV ABC7. Let's take a quick timeout, Sterling. You're listening to Darren and Sterling right here on ESPN Kansas City.
Welcome back to Darren and Sterling here on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, 1510.com, Facebook Live, Twitter, Periscope. What, little Rick James?
I'm loving that, man. Sterling for the win is all I'm going to say on that one.
It's Thursday. Why not play little Rick James, you know? I'll leave it underneath us for a little bit. I like it.
That was good.
Thank you again to Michael Coleman coming on, giving us the updates as well as his update again. We are all in his corner as he is overcoming his battle with cancer. Darren, the Royals, first place in the AL Central, my man. The Royals, 6-4. The AL right now is so jumbled. The worst team in the AL right now is 2 games under .500. It's crazy the parity in the AL compared to the NL in Major League Baseball right now. But the Royals sit at 6-4, which is technically first place in the AL Central. They have not. Wait, let me ask you this, though. They're one of two teams who have not lost a series yet.
Yes, that is true.
Them and the Dodgers.
Red Sox?
Them and the Dodgers. Yeah, Dodgers and Royals are the only two teams who have not lost a series yet.
Nice, nice. Look, I will say this. Because I think we talked about it when they were beginning their homestand, a 10-game homestand, you know, what's the worst and best we'd like to see them do. I was talking about, obviously, you know, you obviously want them to be over 500, so 6-4 at worst. But, you know, I didn't think that 8-2 was out of the realm of possibility. Now, I didn't think they lose the first game like they did, which, you know, cost me a couple of dollars here and there. But that being the case, look, man, the Royals today, it is a Jackie Robinson day in the Major League Baseball. You know, they tip off, they play, well, I guess first pitch is tonight at 7:10 as they host the Toronto Blue Jays. So we'll just see whether or not the Royals can continue, you know, the winning streak right now. They won 2 games in a row. They won last night 6-1. You know, it's just, man, I mean, it's.
It helps when Salvador Perez is hot.
Oh,
it's
gosh,
hotter than the inside of a Hot Pocket right now. I mean, dude is hitting
the play he did
everything.
Last night. Yeah, look, the play he did last night, throwing, you know, to end the game, throwing the guy out. Now, if I remember correctly, the bases were loaded.
Yeah, that was two nights ago.
Okay, well, two nights, well, hell. I'm just seeing the highlights last night because I was watching the game. But yeah, I mean, but the mere fact, yeah, they won 3-2. When he threw the guy out of third place, man, I just thought that was just the most savvy type thing. And the fact that, you know, you have, first of all, you know, it's a big deal when you got a lot of your brothers, you know, next door, the Kansas City Chiefs, Travis Kelce, yeah, and others watching the game and comment on it in real time. Like, that's what Salvi do, you know, and just, man, dude, I love being in Kansas City sometimes. And this is one of those times I love it.
I mean, Salvador Perez, when he gets in these grooves, it's like he's hitting a beach ball. Like, he just sees the ball so well and just pounds it. And with catcher being such a light hitting spot currently in the affairs of Major League Baseball, he is such an advantage over every other team. When you have a catcher like Salvi, who not only plays so many games, but his bat is being this consistent, this hot, plus you add in his defense, like you just mentioned, throwing at a dude at third base to end the game, his pitch framing has been much improved this year. He literally is looking like the best player on the Kansas City Royals. We always talked about what his Hall of Fame votes or potential could be. He has a long way to go, but when you see what he did last year, what you're seeing what he's doing now, ever since he had Tommy John, it looks like that refreshed and revitalized his career.
Well, yeah, I mean, well, one, he had a year off, you know, so to speak, to, one, get healthy and kind of put things in order and refine that love that he may have lost during the time. Because, you know, look, if you take away something that you've been doing all your life and you get it taken away of at least for a year or so by being injured, you know, you start to reflect and you start to, you know, look at things a little bit differently. And the fact that he was able to come back in the manner in which he was and come back even better than he was before says a lot about Salvi himself. Sterling, I do want to go back to what I touched on about today being Jackie Robinson Day in Major League Baseball. Just want to, you know, because I know, like you, you know, we both grew up kind of loving baseball. Just any thoughts on Jackie Robinson and what his impact to the game has meant?
Oh, it's awesome. I mean, he is a trailblazer. There's a reason why his number is retired everywhere. There's a reason why he is basically the face of Major League Baseball. What he did for baseball, it can never be understated, and I'm so glad that every single year everyone stops just to make sure and recognize, don't let that ever be forgotten. Yeah. I love it. I mean, and again, I'm not a huge video game dude, but like MLB The Show, he's the face of Major League Baseball The Show right now. He's the guy. When you are, think of, what was it, 48?
48, I believe, yep.
And we're sitting here in 2021, and you're the face of video games. You're still, you have your day. Just shows the impact of what he had.
Yeah. No, it's, I'm sorry. I think it was 46 or 47. I think he won the MVP in 48.
48 may have been his MVP year.
Yeah, I got to get back to my history books. But yeah, I mean, it, you know, for me, it's important, obviously. And I was listening to a story where, you know, and it's it's not like it's brand new, but Branch Rickey, the owner who brought him up, you know, had to find the right person. It wasn't the fact of just finding a black player to, you know, make it through. But as the story has been told, you know, he didn't want a player that would fight back. He wanted a player that wouldn't fight back. And, you know, I'm not going to lie. I'm not cut from that cloth. And so, you know, somebody spits on me or calls me out of my name or something, yeah, it's going to be some furniture moving. So the fact that, and we're talking about 1940s, and so, you know, this was well before the Civil Rights Act and that type of stuff, because that didn't come around to the 60s. And this was well before DSEG and stuff like that. So the fact that he dealt with this in the 1940s, you know, with the, you know, being the first black to play Major League Baseball, and then of course Larry Doby in the AL a couple of years later. I mean, that's saying something, man. And to go through all the, you know, the racial slurs and stuff like that, and then don't forget his teammates had endured as well, you know. And so is that something about his teammates, that his teammates, you know, would defend him, his teammates, yep, you know, went to bat, like, well, if he can't stay here, we're none of us are staying here. If he can't eat here, none of us can eat here. And so, you know, that's how change started slowly, obviously, in this country. Nothing in this country ever happens overnight. And so with that, yeah, I mean, Jackie Robinson is not only great baseball player, great humanitarian, and a great leader. So,
well, you know, even going off that, what makes it even more impressive was he had to live up to the hype because of everything you just mentioned.
He couldn't be no scrub.
He lived up to that and more. I mean, that's the crazy part, is all that pressure, all the hatred and bigotry going against him, standing up to it, and still being able to perform day in, day out. It's unbelievable when you think about it, because everything's being hurtled at him. You know how easy it would be for anyone to crack under that. And he excelled. It's honestly, it's truly unbelievable to even think about it.
Well, and here's the thing that's popped in my head. We're actually talking about Jack Ryan himself, but we forget about what his family had to go through, his wife, kids, whatever, yeah, because, you know, I mean, while he's traveling across the country with his teammates, his wife and him have to live, you know, wherever they were staying at the time, and deal with that. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, I'm not saying she wasn't in the area where she might have been, you know, felt safe or secure, but you still get phone calls, mail, you know, stuff like that coming in to where, you don't know how your husband is going to be, especially the first year out. You don't know, you know, if he's going to be safe, if he's going to be harmed in any way. And so, yeah, it's, again, I try from time to time think about, you know, those yesteryears, you know, ancestors, stuff like that. And I try to put myself in a situation, okay, how would I have been back in slavery? How would I have been back in the Jim Crow era? How would I have been back in, you know, just Jackie Robinson we're talking about? How would I have been back in the Woodstock era? You know, it is just like, I don't know if I'm cut out for it, man. I mean, I'm just, I feel like I'm just built differently. And so, again, he was the right person at the right time to do the right thing. If I had to have done it, man, I don't know. I mean, my mama raised me fine, so I wouldn't, you know, wouldn't have been a thing like that. But I don't know, man. I mean, I don't know if I could, you know, I could only take probably being called the N-word or something so many times, be like, man, you know. And when he retired, you know, he talked about not wanting to stand for the national anthem, hand over heart, stuff like that. But it affected his health. You know, and that's something that we don't talk about, is the health toll that it took on him, because he didn't, I think he died sometime during the 70s, but, you know, but he, man, he, you know, it's one thing for us to live in the world that we live in now, but the pressure that he was under, that had a physical as well as a mental toll on him as well.
Yeah, just what he's done for baseball, for the world, just cannot be understated.
Yeah. And shout out to Bud Selig and President Clinton at the time when they, you know, when they had the big Jackie Robinson day, and they made sure that his number could never be worn again, and it was retired across all the, you know, even new baseball teams that if they ever sprout up. Well, number 42 is retired, so
the last may have been Mariano Rivera. I think Rivera may have been the last because he was kind of grandfathered in.
Yeah,
he, I think he may have been the last to wear number 42 because. Which also speaks to how old Mo Rivera was and how long he played. But I think he may have been the last, which, again, may have been a very fitting end to the number 42.
Now, speaking of Hall of Famers and things like that, I want to kind of switch. Michael Jordan is going to be inducting two people into the Hall of Fame, or he's going to be presenting two people in the Hall of Fame, Naismith Hall of Fame, later on this year. One of them is, of course, going to be the late Kobe Bryant. Of course, we know about that relationship that they had, but he's also going to introduce Baylor's women's coach Kim Mulkey, and I think that's probably the only time it's the only time that someone has presented two people into the induction ceremony. So I thought about trying to get a ticket for this, but I think it's going to be because it's kind of virtual. I think I might have applied, but I don't know, man. I mean, this is Michael Jordan, man. Your thoughts on this as it was just announced earlier today, about a couple hours ago, actually.
I mean, that's awesome. There's not a better person to honor Kobe Bryant than Michael Jordan, the guy who he obviously tried to mimic his game after. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's not a more deserving person in the world to do this than Michael Jordan, in my opinion. This is fantastic.
Well, and some of the other players that are going to be, and you know, some of the other people that are doing it, if I can pull up
Tim Duncan and Kevin Garnett, introduced by David Robinson and Isaiah Thomas. Not
exactly
not current Isaiah Thomas, but
Detroit Pistons.
Isaiah Thomas. And then Rudy Tomjanovich, he will be introduced by Hakeem Olajuwon and Calvin Murphy.
I'm wondering now, is Isaiah Thomas presenting Kevin Garnett because he's from Chicago, or because I've been trying to figure out the connection between those two?
That one seems
a lot. It's got to be that.
It seems weird to me, right? That was the one I was like, I don't know why Isaiah Thomas is doing the big ticket, but
yeah,
I'm not mad about it.
No, I'm not mad either. I was just kind of curious about it, and I was, look, to Tamika Catchings, you know, look, she was a baller when she was in college, going to Tennessee, and of course in the WNBA, she's presented, like you said, by Alonzo Mourning and Dawn Staley. Again, I got to figure out these connections to some of the stuff, but as we get closer, you know, that'll be something. But here's the other thing: Eddie Sutton, former coach Eddie Sutton, he is going to be presented by John Calipari, Sidney Moncrief, and Bill Self. So
yeah, KU connection right there.
Yeah.
Do you think Isaiah Thomas just did it because Michael Jordan's doing Kobe and Isaiah Thomas is like, well, I got to be here just to kind of rub something in Michael Jordan's face?
No.
I'm kidding. Nah. I'm being facetious.
I know, but Isaiah don't want those kind of problems. But
no, he does not.
But, no, again, I'm Kevin Garnett was born in South Carolina, and I remember, I know this well because my cousin played on an All-American team with him. He moved to Chicago and played at Chicago Farragut his junior senior season or senior year in high school. And I know Chicago is where Isaiah Thomas is from, but again, because he was with the Minnesota Timberwolves before the Boston Celtics, and I'm trying to figure out this Isaiah Thomas connection, unless it's just something because they, you know, from time to time they're on TNT and NBA television, but I just that's like really the only connection I can't figure out, man.
I just think Rudy Tomjanovich, every time I think about him most famously when he got punched as a player, not as the head coach, because he was a very good head coach for, you know, Hakeem and Calvin Murphy. But I always just think of him getting punched. Who was that punch? It wasn't Kareem. It was it Bill Laimbeer?
Not
Bill Laimbeer. That was after.
Man, he got punched in the 70s too.
I know. I'm trying to.
Yeah, but you said Bill Laimbeer.
Kermit Washington. Ooh. That was who punched him.
Caught him flush. Oh, they thought he was going to die that night.
Yeah. Well. That's why I always think of Rudy Tomjanovich was because he got punched by Kermit Washington. I don't even think it was his fault. I thought it was something where he stepped in and Kermit hit Rudy instead of someone else. There was a whole book about it. There was a whole long book. I think it was in I don't know if you like to read. There's a book called The Rivalry.
Yeah, I like to read. What the hell?
Well, I'll lend you some of my books. It was called The Rivalry. It was between Wilt and Bill Russell. It was a very well-written book. It was cool. It was outlined and all that, and I'm pretty sure this was in the story.
Oh.
So.
Yeah. Okay. Well, interesting. Well, all I know is, like you said, that punch, he got caught pretty flush, and so I bet you one thing. I bet you Rudy never ran up on anybody ever again.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
No, I would. I don't know. Yeah, I would not be a boxer after that. All right, we'll take a quick break, Darren. This is Darren and Sterling right here on ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back to Darren and Sterling here on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, 1510.com, Twitter and Facebook Live. All right, Darren, before we go out, I saw you sending me this. Pete Rose is now selling his bets, his baseball picks, and other sports online. How awesome is Pete Rose giving a middle finger to baseball?
I mean, the fact that he hadn't gone into the Hall of Fame yet, he just turned 80 years old. I think, look, I mean, the man still got to pay some bills. I mean, and it's, look, if he was successful doing that while he was coaching and managing and playing, I may have to find $89 somewhere underneath the mattress or something and, you know, get some of these picks. Because if he's any good with it, man, I might have to take him up on it.
Yeah, for $89 a month. You can get Pete Rose's daily baseball prediction. That seems like a lot a month, but I think part of it.
I think he's also going to be doing other sports as well.
He is, but a lot of it is just the novelty of having Pete Rose betting and doing the same bets as Pete Rose. Because to me, it's absolute. It pisses me off that he's not in the Baseball Hall of Fame. Dude bet on his team to win, and I get some of the underlying. The reasons why, some of the stuff you could say. At the end of the day, it's Pete Rose. He is part of the Baseball Hall of Fame. He is who he is. The fact that Rob Manfred or any of the other, I guess at that time commissioners have not let him in or at least given him a chance just blows my mind and just pisses me off. So him doing this is fantastic. He even said, I'm not trying to do this to show up Rob Manfred, even though he knows full well this is showing up Rob Manfred, and I love it.
Well, look, I like the part where he said he's trying to make a living, which I have no problem with that whatsoever. But you know, as it relates to the Hall of Fame, I just think that if he ever gets in, now correct me if I'm wrong, was he in and they banished him? Because
no,
he
was banished before that. The whole thing is absurd. It's been 30 years, Darren.
No. I understand, but I'm saying because like. I'm pretty sure in baseball, just like anything else, you have to wait 5 years or so. But I'm saying, so did he go from
it's
did he
longer
go from playing?
Baseball is longer. Maybe
really?
It's five. Baseball is weird. Baseball is a very weird situation. Baseball's Hall of Fame and being a first ballot is almost unheard of in baseball for some reason. We all know about Mo being the first unanimous, and then you had Derek Jeter. They've loosened it up a bit. Because you're telling me Ken Griffey Jr. wasn't a 100% unanimous Hall of Famer. Baseball Hall of Fame is weird, dude. The writers, yeah, the voters, they're a different breed, man.
Yeah, you always got that one guy. But no, I mean, I think they'll let Pete Rose in after he passes away, which is unfortunate to say, but I think that's the only way he's getting in, and it's going to be, you know, some relative whatever doing out of it. And, you know, what's going to happen is baseball is going to, you know, try to go through the dog and pony show, and then the commissioner will say how they regret that they couldn't do it while he was alive and all this.
You had 40 years to do it. Yeah. I'm with you, Darren. Nothing makes me more upset than doing the post, you know, just after they pass away and then inducting them. Let them have the glory while they're still alive.
Yeah, but again, I mean, he was banished from baseball in 1989. So I'm saying, so you mean to tell me that he couldn't have got in the Hall of Fame after he retired sometime during the 70s or early 80s? Like, come on, man. This is just bad. It's a bad look all the way.
Yeah. Another reason why Rob Manfred, add it to the list. All the baseball changes, all the stuff he's done, add it to the list of... Fire Rob Manfred. I think everyone can agree on that front, right?
I don't have a problem with Rob Manfred, but if you do, then I guess I do. So.
Come on, Darren, you're on my side here.
I just said if you got a problem with him, I got a problem with him, man.
I just said that. Thank you, Darren.
I just agreed with you.
Thank you. Gosh. I love it. I love it, Darren. Well, Darren, this was a lot of fun. We'll be back live in studio tomorrow from 3 to 4 p.m. right here on ESPN Kansas City. He's not going to be live in studio. He just shook his head. It'll be me live in studio as he calls in. This is Darren and Sterling right here on ESPN Kansas City. We are out of here.